Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're going to continue our series of conversations we're having one-on-one with those who are running to be the next Attorney General of Maryland. They all have announced. We were going to put a debate together, as I said, but it was kind of tough to do during the summer months. We will, of course, there'll be EAA, and we'll be sponsoring a debate for all the Attorney General candidates sometime in the fall, winter, and we'll be organizing that with a live audience so we can all have here in the Baltimore area and Prince George's County and more to hear what these candidates are saying. Right now, we have with us Delegate John Cardin, who represents the 11th District in Baltimore County and is going to give up that seat to run for Attorney General. Good to have you with us, John. Welcome.
It's great to be here, Mark.
A lot of people giving up their seats to run for this office.
A lot of people giving up their seats for all kinds of reasons. In fact, we're going to have probably a turnover of more than 40% of the General Assembly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Just with retirements and with people choosing to run for different offices and getting appointments and all kinds of things, you're looking at 50, 60 people.
Wow. Well, we can use a change. Change is good.
Yeah.
Change is good.
So, you know, people say there's a problem with we need term limits. You know, on one hand, you need to have some institutional memory on the other and historical perspective. But on the other hand, we have a tremendous amount of turnover, you know, when you're talking about a third or a fourth or maybe even more than a third of the House and the Senate turning over.
So, all the people running right now for Attorney General are people who serve in the House and or the Senate, one senator and three delegates, which means that you are not known by the rest of the state very much. You're known by the people that you represent, you know, 1/47th of the state. And so that's interesting that that's a leap for you and others to make.
Yeah, I would say that to a certain extent that's true. I have my constituency that hopefully knows me pretty well. I would also say that there's been a number of issues that I have tackled, that others have tackled, that have grown them some familiarity by citizens of the state and outside the state even. I have focused a lot of my time on protecting our most vulnerable communities, our seniors, our children. This last session, I spent a tremendous amount of time on a cyberbullying legislation, creating the most significant piece of anti-cyberbullying law in the entire nation. And I look at this and I look at my job as helping protect the most vulnerable in our communities, and our minors are those who deserve to have an environment where they feel as if they're being protected.
So, John, let me ask you some questions here. And, folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, jump on our Facebook pages. I'll check that in a minute, see if you have comments and thoughts for John Cardin, who's running to be the next Attorney General, 410-319-8888. One of the things I've been asking all the candidates as they come through, and we'll ask all the candidates when they come through, even though it's not directly your bailiwick, it is as kind of the chief law enforcement officer of the state, as someone who has the bully pulpit to make changes. Only one elected official so far in the state of Maryland has responded to the ACLU report that came out showing that Maryland and Baltimore specifically and two of the other jurisdictions, many of our other jurisdictions, and the state of Maryland is one of the worst in the country in terms of arresting and convicting black people or people of color in general for marijuana use. And that there clearly something's up when you have 98% of all those young people arrested in Baltimore City being kids of color, and as if we're saying that white kids don't smoke marijuana.
And we know that must be true, right?
Right. As Attorney General, I mean, as a delegate now, but as Attorney General, what's the response to what clearly is some kind of systemic institutional racism that allows this to happen, and what is our response to addressing it?
Yeah, I would respond in three different ways, Mark. It's a great question, and as you've already indicated, the Attorney General's office doesn't really have a direct contact with law enforcement in that way, in terms of arrests for example, marijuana use. But there are, in my capacity as a legislator, I would say this is a legislative issue that should be dealt with from a legislative perspective. Last year, we passed a bill that essentially, I wouldn't say decriminalized, but gave the option to give a civil citation for very small amounts of marijuana use if done or if it's perceived to be with certain parameters. And it's under the ability of the law enforcement agency to determine whether to offer that opportunity. And I know that you've had State's Attorney Bernstein on here talking about about diversion programs. We've had him many times on the show, I know, but diversion programs, and as being involved in the criminal justice system, I know, and I've had clients who have participated in the diversion programs in Baltimore County, Baltimore City, and hopefully, that's an answer. It's not the answer. But I would say that the bully pulpit is one place where the Attorney General can, both from a legislative perspective, but also talking about using state resources appropriately and making sure that we are treating people fairly and equally. And so if I can just comment on that last comment of treating people fairly and equally, it is up to the Attorney General to make sure that we are both defending the state if the state's going to be sued, or agencies in the state are going to be sued, and if there's an equal protection question, then the Attorney General's office does need to counsel the administration and or different agencies to make sure that they are, in fact, not doing something that would be completely inappropriate. And I would say that treating African-American, particularly African-American young men, differently than everybody else in the state, it puts you in a place where the Attorney General should actually come up with a position.
And what would that be? I mean, how do you get to the heart of that as Attorney General? I mean, because as Attorney General, while this isn't, you don't prosecute criminal cases.
Sure. Except on the appeals level.
You are looked at as Attorney General as the arbiter in many ways of many legal decisions on how we approach the law, and that voice is critical in shaping policy that way.
Yeah. So number one, I would say two different things. Number one is when people need an opinion about what the law is and how the law needs to be complied with, they come to the Attorney General for an official opinion, and they are the agency that provides that, or the office that provides that, not an agency. And number two is that the Attorney General does in fact give legal counsel as to whether there are grounds for lawsuits and whether the state might be implicated in a lawsuit, and certainly wants to be out there making sure that we are complying with all those.
So suppose that happened. Suppose the state gets confronted by a lawsuit like this when it comes to the racial discrimination and the arrest of citizens. You're the Attorney General. Mm-hmm. Do that mean you are put in a position to have to defend the state against the case of people saying that there's discriminatory practice in the state?
I've gotten that question before, and I can give you the easy answer. Like, the Supreme Court usually finds the easiest answer.
Except Tuesdays wasn't so good. But anyway.
We have a couple good ones and a couple bad ones.
Right.
You wouldn't be defending the state against the citizens of the state in that particular matter, because I would assume that it would be the police departments, which are county agencies. So there wouldn't actually be a conflict of interest there. But the fact of the matter is that it is an independently constituted office, and the goal is to protect and treat fairly every single citizen in the state of Maryland. And it is up to the Attorney General. It's a political issue as well as a legal issue to figure out the best way to do that and to make sure that the state and its constituent agencies are in fact complying with laws and, pragmatically speaking, doing the right thing for its constituents.
I mean, because you have issues you're facing here. Then I want to get right into why you're running and what sets you apart from anybody else who says similar things to what you're saying. So I'm curious what sets people apart here in this race. But here we are sitting at Morgan State University, a historically black university. And they're involved in a lawsuit with the state, and that is being defended by the Attorney General, right?
That is correct.
So you're the Attorney General, let's say, for argument's sake, mm-hmm. and you're confronted with that case. How do you handle it?
You have to do what is right. First of all, where's the law on the issue, number one? Number two is, who's your client, and how do you come up with an answer that and the client, if the client's a state, you have to represent the state to the best degree capable. That's what you've been constituted to do. But you also have to look at what's in the best interest of the citizens of the state. And that's when you are able to utilize some of your influence and power to come up with a settlement that actually works. And if you can't, then you know the litigation goes forward. And there are times when there are winners and losers. That's just the fact of the matter in the legal system, which has kept democracy in America going for 200 plus years. You know, I'll just bring it back to what you started off with, which was prisons, and you were talking about specifically marijuana arrests.
But the ACLU study.
The fact of the matter is that we are spending, I just pulled this up, we are spending over $800 million a year in the state of Maryland on both budgeted and non-budgeted prison expenses. That's just far too much. And as a legislator, I would look at ways to help take that money and take the opportunity to utilize it for improving the society as opposed to continuing to expand our prison base. And so, you know, if we can figure out ways to divert especially these nonviolent offenders and also look at ways of making, you know, whether we completely decriminalize or whether we figure out other ways to make marijuana and other minor offense type issues a policy that just keeps people out of the prisons. You know, I will say I might have been prophetic last time I was here on the Steiner Show. I made a comment that I almost regretted. Now I don't about our prison system. We have problems with our prison system being manipulated by both the inmates and by the system in terms of trying to spend too much money and making it too easy for people to get through and buck the system. And then, lo and behold, 2 months, 3 months later, we find out about the scandal going on in Baltimore City prison system. And the scandal is based on, and I'm going to let you jump right into the AG's race. It's based on using technologies to help exploit and manipulate the system. We were using cell phones to create businesses, to make different transactions happening, and to get information in and out of the prison system. We face 21st century problems. We face a rapidly changing world with technology being at the base of all that. It is the new frontier both for the Attorney General's office and for all of us in terms of how we are going to deal with criminals as well as criminal justice matters. We need to make sure that we have somebody who's handling those rapidly changing issues, those high technology issues, cyberbullying, identity theft, predatory lending, predatory businesses. It's the Attorney General that's going to be at the forefront of that.
How do you do that differently than others would say they would do it? What sets the John Cardin's race ideas apart from the others in that?
Well, number one, I would say look at my record. I'm sure everybody says look at my record.
Look at my record.
Okay. So
nobody ever does. So you got to find
okay. So let me suggest point people to a couple of things. Number one is my cyberbullying legislation from last year. Perfect example of how we took an issue that I said this is going to be the new frontier. Since that happened, by the way, I had Ray Rice call me. I had individuals from all over the country call me and say, "We are so happy that you're doing this. How can we help?" Ray Rice is a big anti-bullying guy. The first lady said, "This is a big initiative for me. How can I help?" And we got a bill passed in just one session, unanimously in both houses, because we said this is an area where children should have a place. When I was bullied back in elementary school or high school, I could go home and cry in my room and not have to deal with it. Nowadays, you open up your phone, you open up your computer, and you get punched in the gut immediately. You don't even have to have that happen. You have a friend call you and say, "Did you see what somebody else said about you on Facebook?" And once it's out there, it's never coming back. You cannot contain that. Well, it's not just about that. Once your identity is manipulated or tainted, it is very difficult. Once your credit is tainted, it is very difficult to change that. And You need a mindset of being two steps ahead of these guys. I have shown that. I have proven that that is one of the areas where we need to constantly be two steps ahead. Gangs these days. Gangs, while you know you do have gangs in prisons, they are using the internet to figure out ways to manipulate people, to get money, to be able to hack into computer systems of businesses. You pick up the Wall Street Journal. People ask me, "Are you bipartisan?" I say, "I have a subscription to the Wall Street Journal. Doesn't that make me bipartisan?" I read the Wall Street Journal and I read the New York Times every day. And when I read the Wall Street Journal every day, there's an issue of people hacking into Wall Street, hacking into the New York Stock Exchange. That is a fact that the Attorney General of Maryland ought to be at the forefront of. These types of issues where people are being manipulated and exploited day in and day out. And let me just end with, I know you have a million different questions, but seniors are constantly being attacked by businesses who are trying to take advantage of the fact that they either can't read very well, believe that they're going to be getting some advantage for signing up for a certain type of program, and then wind up having to pay out the nose for months on end until they can figure out a way go through the Consumer Protection Division of the AG's office to get off those lists. Excuse me. I am thrilled to be at the forefront of these kinds of issues and try and stay two steps ahead. I will say that I believe it's called. I'm trying to coin a term. Citizen protection. We have citizens are minorities, our businesses, our seniors. Everybody, hopefully, everybody who wants a job will eventually have a job. Those jobs need to stay in Maryland, and we need to make sure that we are doing everything we can to the extent possible. To help the citizens of Maryland, whether they be minors, whether they be school children, whether they be people who are trying to drink clean water, whether they be people who are trying to just make a living and understand the new healthcare law and understand how to navigate through a regulatory environment where they don't necessarily have the legal expertise to be able to get through it.
So, how does that change the function of the Attorney General's office now? I mean, I'm curious how what's going to be different. I mean, it's I remember interviewing all the candidates in the last race that yielded our present Attorney mm-hmm. General, who now seems to be running for governor, mm-hmm. Which is why you're running for Attorney General.
I think it's fair to say that he's on his way to running for governor.
I think Gamzer's going to run for governor, but how do you? How think it would be anything different? I mean, why is it people should care about? This race for attorney general. What difference does it make if it's you or Isha Braveboy or any of the others who are running, Frick, or any others who are running for the seat?
Sure.
Why should it make what difference does it make to us?
I mean,
one of you is there?
Well, so I would hope that there's a question number one of trust and of familiarity, believing that somebody is out there interested in the protection and equality and treatment and equality of all Marylanders. And that somebody has an ear and saying, I'm willing to listen to not just the people who believe that they've been harmed, but the unintended consequences of changing specific policies, litigating certain different issues, and making sure that we understand and we don't go in blindly and just say, yes, this is the law. And this assistant AG has been for years has been just not allowing people to ever try and work through a certain specific regulation, but understand what's the purpose of the regulation and how can we help negotiate through those different problems that people are facing. At the same time, if somebody is polluting, is spewing green sludge into the bay, or some other major dumping, has a dump site on their lot, and that's leaching toxins into the groundwater. You got to believe that the AG's got the spine to actually go after them. You know, somebody like me, I can't speak for my colleagues. Maybe they're the same, but I have a 97% voting record with the League of Conservation Voters, 100% this year. But at the same time, you ask any business entity who has come to my office as a legislator and asked just to be heard. And they say, you may not agree with me, but at least you're going to listen to my issues and understand the unintended consequences of doing something before you do it. And hopefully, I believe, as the Attorney General, that I will always have an open ear. I will set up a commission for small businesses. I'll set up a commission for labor relations. I'd set up a commission to understand the issues on minority interests. Coincidentally, I as the election law subcommittee chair, I know that civil rights and voting rights is very important to you, and it's important to me, and it's something that I'd be happy to discuss how the Attorney General's office can, in fact, be very involved, both as an influential bully pulpit, but also in recommending and working with legislative offices on making sure that everybody is enfranchised who has the legal right to be able to vote in the state of Maryland is able to vote in the state of Maryland.
So, and folks, I know this is we often don't get a lot of calls when the first candidate comes on, but we'll probably get them down the line, I'm sure. Same thing happened the other day when one of your opponents was on. But people are listening because we get a lot of email afterwards. 410-319-8888. We're talking with Delegate John Cardin from Baltimore County, 11th District. He's running for Attorney General for the state of Maryland. That election takes place in 2014.
In exactly a year. We have an early primary, and the reason for the early primary is that we got a directive down from the federal government that from the Overseas Voter Act that there has to be a minimum of 45 days between the primary and the of 45 days between the primary and the certification of the ballot, the general and the certification of the ballot. And that meant that we had to have more than 60 days between the primary and the general. And people didn't want to have the primary in, say, late August when everybody's at the beach. So instead, they decided to do it sometime earlier. And certainly the legislature didn't want to have it during the legislative session when they were going to be down in Annapolis and not be able to be back in their communities. So we found sort of this area right at the end of June that we thought was right.
Because obviously we spend too much time campaigning in this society. Maybe people would argue we should do less campaigning and more governing.
We need to have more governing and less money in politics. That would be great.
How would you deal with that as AG? Well, now as you raise it. Go ahead.
I would. Number one, I would continue to promote one of my signature issues, which is a public funding program for the legislature and for the governor. The governor presently has one, but there's not enough money in the gubernatorial public funding program to really generate adequate candidates. I've been a big supporter of this. I think it's incumbent neutral. My colleagues oftentimes say that they don't want to support it because they think it's going to hurt their incumbency opportunities. But the fact is, if you're a smart, good policymaker and a relatively savvy politician, it doesn't matter whether you're working off public funds or private funds. As long as it's a voluntary system, I think that would be the best way to get candidates out there who don't necessarily need to raise special interest money.
So I want to come back to something we talked about just a minute ago that involves these cases. We'll come back to the HBCU case. If you were Attorney General, what would you have advised? Would you advise not to pursue the case? Would you advise some kind of compromise negotiation? What would you have done if you were AG?
We're talking about the case with
HBCUs and funding.
So right. The historically black college funding cases. I'll be frank with you. I don't know enough in terms of the legal side to be able to make a legal. I usually tell my clients before I give any legal advice, especially my friends who don't pay me, that the advice I give you is worth how much you pay for it. I don't know enough about what I would have done. I probably would have worked with obviously my assistants to figure it out. I can tell you how I would have handled it. I would have sat down. We would have figured out whether there's a legitimate cause of action, whether the state was really needed to comply with these rules, and I would have probably sat down and tried to figure out some sort of position to negotiate some sort of settlement. And if not, I would have said that I think the law is on our side. I think we need to figure out a different mechanism for you guys to go. Let's go to the legislature and maybe we can help you with trying to create budgets that do it instead of going through the legal process.
When you see things like what happened to the Bank of America news coming out, where the employees are saying how Bank of America set people up to lose their mortgages, to lose their homes, to push foreclosures, It's a nationwide issue. Attorneys general across the country have come together before on different issues around this. How do you protect us from that?
So our president attorney general, it's one of the things that it was one of his signatures, and he was the lead plaintiff in the mortgage fraud case that and wound up because of his position wound up bringing $1 billion to Maryland. The issue that I think we ought to be discussing at this point is how is that money going to be spent to use for the most number of people to get the biggest advantage in terms of, you know, creating better home ownership and creating a better system of advising people what it means to go into home ownership and understanding those the potential losses that you could face. I hope that money is going to be used properly. It won't all be spent by 2014, and God willing, if I should have the opportunity, I will be able to advise how that money should be spent.
So, John Carden, website?
JohnCarden.com, and we will hopefully, within the next month or so, we're hopefully going to have a brand new website that people are going to just be wowed by, because technology is one of my signature issues in dealing with technology, and I think that people will be very impressed when they see the new website.
John Carden, we'll be back as we head down the campaign trail for Attorney General. He is running for State Attorney General. He is right now delegate representing the 11th District in Baltimore County. Good to see you, John Carden.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Good to have you.
Look forward to coming back.
Oh, yeah. And as we wrap up, I remind you, support for WEAA is provided in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, MECU.com is the place to go. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Ennery, and Stephanie Maronis. Our engineers are Andrea Melton. Our interns are Lila Warshaw, Albert Phillips Jr., Danielle Dupree, Alexander Rudy, Sinead Hawkins, and Kamani Selden. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can hear the show again, find information about our guests, like John Carden's website, and at steinershow.org. And you can listen and download to all of our programs on iTunes. You get them there if you want to. For Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of community. Stay tuned. Michelle Martin is coming up behind me. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.